culture for what all of us appropriate in our life. And the only one who can finally calm that storm is Christ. Not know that is not know our faith. I've been telling the people coming to the class at the Missionaries of Charity, spending two semesters on the real peasants. That we believe that Christ, the same identical Jesus who calmed the storm at sea, is here on earth, right here in Joppa. And I repeat what I said at the beginning. Everything in the world is meant, of course, has its own function. But theologically speaking, the world provides all the analogies for our faith. Analogy means comparison. A comparison which, by understanding nature and comparing nature with what God has revealed, we can understand the mystery that, in this case, Christ revealed when he calmed the storm at sea. Now, some people's lives are more stormy than others, but every person who wants to serve Christ is going to live a stormy life. That's a safe statement. Hey, don't get scared. You don't panic. You don't run away from the storm and run for cover. Christ is asleep. Over the years, how many people whom I've counseled, trials, humanly speaking, unbearable trials. Where is God? Seems to be asleep. No. First of all, it isn't just that Christ, though we can safely say he was dead tired, anybody who was fast asleep in a thunderstorm at sea looked very tired. For me, most inspiring passages, I think I've told you more than once, of the Gospels speak of our Lord, and he was tired. Fatigatus est. That's the mysticism I understand. I can lecture on ecstasies and raptures. I've never had one. But being dead tired, that I know. That's Christ. He became man to get dead tired. But then we can also say he remained asleep to make sure that the disciples would be in a panic and wake him up. So then, what did Christ tell them? Did he praise them or rebuke them? Rebuke them. Having little faith. In other words, this is the Lord of the ocean, the Lord of the winds and seas. He is asleep, as the disciples saw him, as man. Is God ever asleep? No. Is God always around? Sure. Trust him. And then, of course, the miracle after the doubt. The miracles of Christ have two purposes. Every miracle has two purposes. The immediate purpose, of course, was that Christ might work the miracle, form the act of charity, healing, calming the storm, even raising the dead. The second reason was to provide foundation for our faith. In other words, the man called Jesus of Nazareth was and is the living God. And he not only worked miracles, never say when Christ worked miracles, never say that. I never see when Christ was on earth, never say that. Just isn't true. Christ is on earth, and Christ works miracles. Meditation 50. Christ walks upon the waters. You notice these meditations are selective, but I, over the years of teaching both St. Ignatius theologically and giving the exercises, these are meditations that St. Ignatius himself favored, chose. And remember what happened. Christ walked on the waters. And leave it to Peter. He didn't have to say this. Lord, if it's really you, he shouldn't have said it. If it's really you, would you tell me to walk on the water? Or did Christ ever have a sense of humor? First of all, there's one doubt. Peter should have said in the first place, if it's really you. Then he began walking on the water. He shouldn't have looked down. It's always a mistake. Should have kept looking at our Lord. He panicked. And he began to sink. My friends, that's no figure of speech. You're only as strong as we are convinced. The primary strength is in the mind. In the mind. Only convinced people have a strong will. If it is only as strong as the mind, and the mind is only as strong as it's convinced that it has the truth. But I think I told you, in fact, in a meeting in Western Michigan, in Kalamazoo, when I was teaching on the faculty, I told you this, didn't I? Faculty meeting. I wonder what the occasion was. Case full of beer and Brussels. I don't drink beer. So then soon the meeting opened, I realized the head of the department told me, Hardin, this meeting is for your benefit. Well, my third semester in Western Michigan. Well, what's up? And the same head of the department, I won't quote what he said, Hardin, you are so blankety blank sure of yourself. We can't stand it. The poor PhDs, educated ignoramuses. And of course, the problem was, by the first semester, I had more than one half of the of about 1,000 students registering for the faculty. 7 men of the department by the third semester, and over 500 students in my classes. Another word, of course, is envy. So I heard them talk and rant. I enjoyed it immensely. I was kind, of course, and understanding. I could appreciate their plight. But back to the subject. It is conviction in the mind. And of course, at first, and people don't know you, they think maybe you're a fanatic or some kind of a weirdo. This kind of conviction is only, you know, psychopathological. They found out. Speaking again back to my experience, and this is not just there, but elsewhere too. They find out that you know what they know plus. You know more than they do. And there are certain things you just don't doubt. And the students, let me tell you, they just love it. Somebody who can give them, so I told them, the truth. Then your mind is filled. There's only one food for the mind. That's the truth. Everyone else is starving. That's what our nation is. It is a starving society. I hope you believe me. Starving for the truth. I don't hear anything, so am I supposed to hear something? Well, in the middle of page 94, the need of courage in the apostolate. But remember, courage as such is in the will. But the foundation of courage is conviction in the mind. If we only is courageous in our wills, either undertaking what Christ wants us to, or in enduring what he also wants us to suffer, only on the measure that we're convinced. And this is not psychology. This is experience. The martyrs, one after the other. And not a few of them, as you know, even rejoicing when they were, remember what Lawrence said? When being baked, turn me over. The one side has been baked enough. Or Thomas More, with the bishop who had apostatized under Henry VIII, came to argue with Thomas More in prison. More, don't be dumb. Well, you better tell the king, is it, you know, you back his divorce from Catherine. And More, well, he smiles and says, look, the only difference between you and me is that I'll die earlier than you, so that's all. So what's the fuss? What's your worry? You better die too. The bishop needed to say was never canonized. The layman was. It is conviction. And by the way, Thomas More should be read. Harvard University, I think, has completed the last of the publication of all of Thomas More's writings. 400 years have been in manuscript. Somewhat archaic English, but thrilling. And what we need is a Thomas More today. Today is a papal primacy. Well, I'm even telling a bishop. Now, he didn't say your excellency. What's the fuss? You're going to die, I'm going to make it first. But then he said, I'm going to be sure of my salvation and not so sure of yours. Well, Thomas More had a sense of humor too. Then meditation 51. Christ sends the apostles to preach. Now clearly this 51st meditation is really thematic for the whole of the exercises, because that's the whole purpose of making the exercises, that we might better dispose ourselves to be more effective channels of grace to other people. Remember, that's what an apostle means, being a channel of grace to others, to everyone, and I mean everyone, even momentarily enters our lives. And of course, we will be only as effective channels as we are ourselves united with God. But you follow the logic. It is not, mind you, sanctity is not selfish. Am I clear? Not to become more humble, more patient, more this, more that, so I become more holy. Forget it. No. The purpose of acquiring these virtues and becoming more holy is that I then might be used by God more effectively than I could be or would be if I were not as closely united with God. There's a profound pragmatism in our faith. Look, as you do 45 years in the priesthood, oh. At table this evening, I asked about one of my brethren here from the university, priest that I taught theology, left the order. Is it large? And I heard that he's still in Detroit. Well, knowing these people, I know the terrific pressures to which priests especially are subject to in our day. My heart goes out to them. And if I can speak of one favorite apostle, is working with priests and be a channel of grace to priests and you people more than you'll ever know until eternity. We need you. When I say this, sometimes people think I'm exaggerating. I'm not. I honestly believe you people are giving me more than I'm giving you. Honestly. In other words, being a channel of grace to others and the measure in which we ourselves are united with God. And notice the power that Christ gave his apostles. Power over demons and sickness. And do we ever need this power today when the devil is really at large? And sickness. Men flew from Boston this afternoon, came from the airport. He talked for 2 hours. There were 6 other people with him. And then to the 5 o'clock flight. He was done going back to Boston or Chicago. A layman, I could talk for not 2 hours, at least 1 hour. One of the largest computer companies in the world, which is manager. And a friend of his in Detroit thought it would be good for the two of us to meet. And he's in the computer, the latest, the very latest multi-million dollar technology. And he showed had a disc. And he said, now, on this disc are 8 million words. And I thought, but in other words, so of course I was very happy to get this, and I will have to write things up because what I know about computer technology is. So to describe it for the use of the church. When I was teaching at the University of Ottawa, a friend of mine who was chairman of the Department of International Education at the university there told me, in the 21st century, by the 21st century, many of them, most of the universities of the Western world will be closed. Education will be mainly by technology, including computer technology. What he demonstrated was, it was breathtaking. And it's just the beginning. Believing Catholic, can the church use this? No. I'm sure it can, but so there's a layman took time off from his business to fly in here and tell this to me so that I could share with those around the church who can put this. I say it's breathtaking. Another term that was mind-boggling technique. And not just that he has so much on his one tape and print, but he's also visual. He's also audible. And even as you're looking at a page, a voice is explaining what this means. And on the same, call it page or screen, about 12 inches around, then there are, just because you got to know what you're doing, and explanations. And of course, can the church ever use this? Of course. And believe me, if we don't do it, you know who will use it? The enemies of the church. So that Christ sends the apostles to preach power, demons and sickness, prudence and patience, and those two virtues go together. Prudence is in the mind and patience is in the will. And even as you're praying and asking the Lord to enlighten you, remember, there are three basic questions that we should ask our Lord. First, Lord, what do you want me to do? Secondly, how do you want me to do it? As the how, which is the virtue of prudence. Those two words go together, prudence and how. So many good people, generous people, prayerful people, zealous as can be, but they just lack prudence. You know what I'm saying? They just, well, good people, maybe just, you close your eyes or close your ears when you listen to them. Oh no! Oh no! You just don't do it that way. So prudence, knowing how. And thirdly, how much will I have to suffer? What do you want me to do? How do you want me to do it? And how much will I have to suffer? Anticipate suffering. You know what patience is all about, remember? And patience is not just voluntary suffering. As it were, post factum. So I'm suffering now, so I resign myself, so I'm patient. No. Patience is anticipated voluntary suffering. Am I making sense? In other words, I ask God what He wants me to do, but I foresee what I foresee, what I'll have to pay for it. So what am I to do? What am I attempt to do? To walk away. These are three basic questions that as we go through the exercises, we should keep asking our Lord. And no two of us have the same call and vocation from Christ. And even no one of us. Different situations, as we call them casually, that God puts us into. The Lord is expecting things of me now that He did not demand, say, 5 years ago. So, prudence and patience. Then the 18th day. Preludes to the Passion of Christ.